an Israeli research firm has reported that the iPad and iPod, the iOS client for LinkedIn, has actually been shown that it takes information, all the information, from your iPod, iPhone calendar and reposts it to the servers at LinkedIn. So LinkedIn now has all the information from your personal iPad or iPhone calendar, if you're an iPad or iPhone user, on the servers at LinkedIn, and that is a breach of your personal security.
David, let's for clarification, when you say iPhones and iPads, no other tablets or other
tablets
and no other smartphones?
Specifically the iOS calendar client.
In other words, it's really if you have an Apple product.
Yeah, this is a problem that LinkedIn has on Apple.
Well, let me ask you, what is LinkedIn doing about it?
I have no information on that right now. Right, all I have is the New York Times reporting that the Israeli reported it today. LinkedIn, however, has admitted in the first story that they were hacked and that all those passwords were stolen.
Hmm. So, in other words,
bad security day for LinkedIn.
Yeah, you know, all these social networks, you really wonder, you know, how safe they are. And you know what? I really am quite concerned about it.
Yeah. Well, you know, what's funny is I belong to all of them, of course. I think you're my Facebook friend, aren't you?
Nope, I refuse.
You refuse to go on Facebook.
I refuse. I'm very serious about it. I'm not saying it for the sake of saying it. I really refuse.
Yeah, well, I just have.
I actually
personally believe that there just isn't any privacy in the world. That privacy isn't there. Is it just you and me tonight?
Yes, just you and me tonight. And you know, there was a story just came out that was a study done by McAfee on, and they did it on 20. They scanned 27 million machines in 24 countries. Now that's a big database of stuff to look at, right?
Right.
And they are now reporting that in the United States, 19% of the PCs are unprotected without any antivirus software installed.
Right, and more than that, most places.
And they said that we're not the worst, but we're close to the worst in the world. And who's worse than us? Spain. Spain has the highest number of PCs without protection.
Now, here's my question. Okay, so McAfee scanned these machines all over the world, right?
And you want to know how they did it.
Using what?
Yeah.
I mean, if McAfee's scanning your machine, isn't that machine protected by McAfee's software?
Well, part of it is. I don't know where the rest is coming from, okay?
Right.
I do know that I was looking at, you look at some of these want ads. When I say want ads, you know, you go to some of these sites and you kind of say, gee, there's a big economic issue with many, many people. And, you know, sometimes you scan through and find out, and if you can help anyone in the listening audience, you know, where the jobs are. And I found that there was one company looking for people to work on botnets.
Yeah.
And you say to yourself,
this is a big controversy.
No. And I'm saying, wait a minute. You mean they are actually advertising for people to work on botnets? I mean, like, if anything, you would keep it quiet, right?
Well, some malware is commercially produced. There was a while where there was a gray area where we had, you remember the adware and spyware era, right? And those were all produced by publicly held commercial companies, and we just had a malware story a little while ago that was a publicly traded company in Estonia that was stealing your browser and showing you ads other than the ads that were on websites. So you would look at a website, and it would look just the same website, except where there was an ad in a corner of the website, the ad was stolen, and another ad was replaced with it.
Well, in this story from McAfee, what they said is that the country with the least secure computers with a very high percentage is Singapore.
Yes, I would imagine that's true.
And at the bottom of the list is Spain, United States, and I was shocked at this other country as being not very secure at all, Japan.
Well, Hank, I am not sure if I agree with that. I would have to read the study. because are the only thing they're talking about for security is the presence of an antivirus scanner?
They're only talking about the presence of an antivirus program.
Yeah.
Okay.
And how much security does that offer?
Well, you know what? It's sort of like you don't worry about step two until you get to step one. And you don't have it, yes, you could say that having it does not mean that it's secure, and it could be a forced sense of security, but to outright not have any at all, it's really like, I dare you to try to...
that's true. I'm in favor of people running security software. In fact, I've earned my entire living as an adult from antivirus companies. I'm an antivirus company.
In other words, from your point of view is, you love this because that's how you earn your living.
There's still somebody I can sell antivirus software to out there. So it's a good thing. But what I was going to say is, many years ago, like 15 years ago, mm-hmm. we in the industry didn't want to ever collect information from the people that we were scanning. So if we scanned your system and you were infected with something, we didn't know it. Even as soon ago as 5 years ago. What really changed that was when Microsoft got into the business. Microsoft never assumed that you got privacy with your security. So when they found something, when Microsoft finds something on your system, it gets reported back to Microsoft. And oddly, there's security components built into Internet Explorer and into MSE and into various components of the Microsoft Trojan Remover, all kinds of Microsoft components that are part of a normal Windows install have security scanners built into them for very specific purpose, and all of that reports back into Microsoft. I go every year to a big conference at Microsoft called the MVI, or Microsoft Virus Initiative, which is part of MSRA, or the Microsoft Security Research Alliance, and we might be sitting in that, and a guy from Microsoft will get up and go, look, out of the 500 million systems that we tested, we see that 1.3% have been infected with botnets in the last 24 hours.
A couple weeks ago, almost 2 weeks ago, as you know, there was a major IPO with Facebook, and the initial offering price was $38, and it spiked up to almost $50, within the first hour. But now, today, it's in the $25-$24 range. It's really dropped. And I wasn't surprised by that at all. And the reason was because they had done a survey and asked the people, I don't know how they did the survey, but they said that for those, they were asking about, do they like Facebook or not? And over 51% of the people said they don't trust Facebook because of security.
Yeah.
And that tends to lower the price on the value of your company. It has to. In other words, if they don't trust it, they're not going to use it.
Well, you've never been a Facebook user.
Nope, I don't believe in it. And by the way, this was related to General Motors. As you know, General Motors was one of their biggest advertisers, and they pull out of it and saying, we don't believe in it. And that's coupled with the fact that...
Well, they weren't showing any results on their ads was why they pulled out.
Well, they were not showing results, but also... I think that when you have a survey where more than half the people don't trust you, how do you run a business?
Well, what is their business? Where do they make their money?
Well, they make their money by linking people together.
Yeah, but I've been on Facebook for a long time now. I don't see where they make their money. I don't see the advertising.
Well, no. See, that's where the trust is. Okay, what they do is that they have your profile, and they said that they are, from a demographics point of view, making that profile available, not identifying you the person, but, you want to send ads to people who are interested in, let's say, yachts or boats or cars and so on. You know, we can identify people. We can identify people who would like, the same likes.
And identify them to who?
Well, the thing is, they have your email, and they say, we can make this available, or... we can send out on your behalf any of the advertised information you want to be sent out. And I suspect they give them the information.
Well, then where's the money? Where does the money come from?
Oh, no, from the advertising.
Exactly. Okay, so I'm getting junk mail that arrives at my house physical junk mail because I'm on Facebook, and I'm getting not spam, but legitimate advertising email. Because
well, you know what?
Spammers don't have the money to pay for information about me.
Well, you know what? The big controversy now in the last a day or two about Facebook is that they're talking about make Facebook available to school kids.
Yeah.
And you know what? These, you know, younger people, you know, the kids, they don't realize that, you know, whatever you put up there, it can haunt you as a grown-up. Especially
yeah.
when
well,
you start...
It's,
when you,
but
you,
unfortunately, you, Hank, that is now the world in which we live.
In other words, if you're looking for a summer job, you know, hey...
Yes, but that is now the world in which we live. We no longer live in a world that contains any kind of an assumption of privacy.
Well, the thing is, if I don't participate in it, I don't get caught in it. And people
except people you know participate in it.
I know. Yes, there are people I know who participate in it, and they said...
And sometimes mention of you or your photo or something will wind up in it.
You know what? But at least you can't say, I said, or, you know... I mean, some of the people really give out information that they really shouldn't, okay?
Yeah.
Or, you know, the thing is... If people put up information about me, it's not directly from me. But if I put up a direct quote, people have been fired for putting up a so-called private quote, and yet it gets out.
Exactly. There is no more expectation of privacy in our world.
Well,
just none.
Well, you know what? If enough people say, I'm not participating, they either have to change their policy, change the way they operate, or you're not going to stay in business, or you're going to get a competitor that comes around and say, they won't do it, we will do it.
I still don't know what the business is.
Well, the business is really, I mean, if you think about it, what is Google's business? It's, you know, all the searches, and they...
No, I know what Google's... I know where Google gets their money. When you go to do a search,
they
only do you get just things that are related to the search, you get people who bought that word. I know it because
right.
I've worked in, like I said,
well,
in the antivirus industry.
If you think about it...
Whenever there's a big virus outbreak, like during, say, Conficker, virus companies bid for and pay for being put in the top 10 things of your search. So you'd search for Conficker, and let's say Symantec paid the most, they're at the top of your Google search. That's
yeah,
where
yeah but the thing
comes.
Is, you know, if on Facebook, you basically indicate your education level, where you're going to school.
Where's the money?
Oh, hey, if I'm targeting products or services to a certain age group, I have it right there.
You have, but where does Facebook get their money? Who's paying?
No. From
any money?
No, they. You know what? Their revenue is over $1 billion, so obviously they are making money, and the money comes
from.
Where
are they? Is it advertisers are paying them?
Yes. Yes.
Well, that's really odd, because if you look at a page full of Facebook, like I am this very second, there are no ads.
No, you don't understand. In other words, you're not seeing the ads. The advertisers are getting information to send you the ads.
Oh, okay. So the Facebook is selling information about me to the advertiser.
Correct.
Yes, of course. That's obvious.
In other words,
I was just leading you down this line.
Oh, okay. In other words... I go on Facebook and say, let's say I have a cat and I'm concerned about my cat, and I go on Facebook and, you know, say my cat is a certain age and needs certain care and so on. All of a sudden, you're going to see information come to you.
Right. Here's the deal. The reason people are catching on is Facebook continuously changes the privacy settings.
And
so
unfortunately,
no matter
people
do
not
to your settings
right,
to try
and
secure your privacy.
Yeah,
they yank the rug out from under
well,
you.
Well, the
about
thing
every
is,
3 months.
The thing is, people read carefully what their setting should be, but when they change it, it changes the default. When they change it, and people, when they're busy, sometimes they just don't realize settings got changed.
Yeah.
Well, that's one reason why I don't join any of these social networks. And let me put it this way: I don't consider myself a recluse or a hermit, but I don't need. I'm serious about this. And one reason why a lot of people join social networks is they feel that they have to be able to say, "I have 1 million friends. I have 100 million friends. I have 50 million friends." You know what? I got 2-3 good friends, best friends. That's all I need in my life. I don't need 100 million friends, right?
Actually, I have about 2,000 friends on Facebook.
2,000 friends. I got news for you.
If I know a lot of people around the world.
Right. And you know what? How many people would you invite to stay overnight in your house?
Well, I don't know about inviting them to stay overnight. Wait a minute.
What is a friend?
What is a friend, okay? Yeah. Incidentally, anyone listening who's a barbecue attendee, the barbecue has been called off this year. We're not going to have the barbecue this year. And it's funny because I went to cancel it on Evite. Because, you know, you've gotten Evite invitations.
Yes.
In the past, right?
Yes.
I went to cancel it on Evite, and Evite lets you send out one last email to everybody telling them that it's canceled. And
You mean Evite, the service is gone?
Evite broke down in the middle of it, and I wasn't, and it already canceled the event, so I can't get, I have to create an event just to cancel it now.
When people are talking about computing in the cloud and storing things in the cloud and doing business in the cloud, and they would say to me, why am I so down on it? And my answer is, look, it's there. If you want to use it, use it. But I don't feel...
Wait, Hank. Did you know Ray Bradbury passed away today?
Yes. But I also say, I don't feel it's ready for prime time. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, the cloud?
Yes. That's not ready for prime time.
I'm not sure the automobile is ready for prime time.
Well, let's put it this way. I don't think the electric automobile is ready for prime time.
Yeah, well, let's put it this way.
In fact, I had an argument with someone. Well, let's not call it an argument, a big difference, okay? He's saying that, hey, and he's saying, what is wrong with the electric automobile industry? I said, it's very, very, very easy. Every manufacturer has a different internet recharging interface. Unless you have a standard, I'm not going to drive anywhere more than 20, 25 miles on an electric car, all electric car. How am I ever going to get home? Okay.
Right, right. Well, the standard for the electric car is going to have to be the 110 wall plug.
Now, you talk to different manufacturers. They say, well, no, if you have this special one, we can recharge everything in a quick charge in 10 minutes, okay? And of course, you know, on some others, we can recharge your car in 10 hours. Hey, I'm not going to go to a gas station and sit there for 10 hours while it's recharging, all right?
Yeah.
And then, you know what the other catch is when they sell you these cars? They say, do you live in a house or do you live in an apartment? You live in an apartment, there's no way you can recharge it.
Yeah.
You know what Sydney just said? Very, very long extension cord.
Yeah. Okay, well, here's... Okay.
Hey, listen, you know, there's a couple of stories here I just want to go over, okay?
Okay, sure.
Did you know that Verizon, as of a few weeks ago, are now saying that if you want DSL service, you must order a landline? You cannot order DSL line without a landline?
Well, DSL comes on a landline, doesn't it? I mean, isn't that how it connects to your
house? No. I think you'd be surprised. About 10% of their DSL service is without a landline. In other words...
What wire does it come in the
well, you know what it is. I mean, like, I'll give you a good example. My son originally started off with a DSL, and he dropped a landline because he says, I don't need it. I got a cell phone. Why am I paying for a landline?
Right.
So a lot of people were dropping off landlines because they have a cell phone. You know, about 25 to 30% of the people, I think it's even higher, it's more like 30%, no longer have a landline.
Yeah.
Now, do you have a landline?
I have everything.
You have everything.
I have a landline and Fios and Vonage and Fios Internet and satellite television.
Oh, now, I would drop my landline if I was sure that my need for an analog line was no longer needed. And the reason
I left my fax machine connected to a landline, and that fax machine landline is there as a safety.
I mean, who's going to send you a fax when you got email?
There are things that you have to fax in. There are things in the world that are fax-friendly and not email-friendly to this very day.
Well, do you know why
Doctors, specifically.
I was just going to say, do you know why I still have a landline? Is because there was one time, under medical care, I was wearing a monitor, and I was told that any time the monitor goes off, I have to transmit the signal directly to back to, you know, the lab or you know, to the doctor. And to my shock was when the monitor went off, I had trouble finding a landline out in the street. In other words, it's an acoustic coupler I needed.
Yeah.
And he says, well, if you get home within 10 hours, you could then transmit the signal. I said to myself, yeah. And then I maintain a landline at home because I needed it. Now,
you could do that over, say, a Vonage connected phone.
Well, let me put this way. I'm seeing the doctor in a few weeks. I'm going to be asking him, with the new medical instrumentation, can I get rid of the analog line? If he says yes, hey, that's $30 I save, you know, a month. And by the way,
we'll be getting rid of our fax line before too long.
You know that landline is like it's an old number we've had for a long time, and we don't really use it other than incoming calls. So basically, it's like, you know, really basic charges, and the so-called charges on it, access charges, taxes, and so on. It's like two times the cost of the base charge itself. Unreal.
More than that. Here,
in other words, one third of the cost is real. The other two thirds of the cost is so-called access charge. I feel like saying I want a detailed breakdown of these. What are they called? Slamming, cramming, and whatever charges they have.
Right.
Hey, by the way, do you use National Broadband Service?
No, I use Verizon Fios.
Oh, no, you know what I mean by national broadband? In other words, it's you carry the USB device, or you carry whatever device it is, and you have internet service anywhere you go, wherever they provide coverage.
I used to do that. When my previous employer, before I worked for Komodo, they provided me with that. But you know, Hank, there's Wi-Fi everywhere now.
Well, the thing is,
plug in everywhere.
Yeah, but you know what? Sometimes when you really want it, you just want to make sure you have it. Well, the thing is, Verizon is now saying that with these with the data plan, if you're on if you want to go to 4G, up until recently, all right, they said that they had an unlimited data plan. Now, if you subscribe for you're a new subscriber on the data plan, it's no longer unlimited.
I was just discussing this at lunch. You can with somebody who's having this problem. You can hang on to it until the next time you update your device.
In other words, yes. In other words, if you're running with a Wi-Fi or 3G and you want to go 4G, guess what?
You're
going to really have to think about it, because now, according to them, and you know, by them I mean Verizon, what they're saying is that only, you know how the word only is, okay? Only 0.5% of the people are affected by this. Baloney, okay?
Well, this is really funny. Originally, way back when we first got online, before we were getting on the internet at large, when we first got on, say, CompuServe, and I know you were on CompuServe.
No, I was not. I was not.
Okay, well, I was. Hmm. Originally on CompuServe, you paid by the minute.
Oh, yes, yes.
Expensive.
Oh, yes, that yes. That was back in 1991, when I was doing that.
I would go on.
It was 75 cents a minute.
Go on real time. You would have a reader that would go out and grab all your messages and pull them down.
Hey, David,
and then log you off. Right,
I remember paying 75 cents a minute.
75 cents a minute. I was running a forum there, so the company was paying for it. And you would go out. You would log on. You had a product called Blue Wave that would log you on, grab everything, and pull it down, and then log you off. Do the same thing with bulletin board systems.
I got one more item I just want to go over with you, okay?
Okay.
Have you heard of the World Trade Organization Information Technology Agreement?
No.
Well, this WTO ITA. In other words, what they do is that if you have a camcorder, there's a 5.4% duty charge on the device.
For what?
For a camcorder.
So to take it from one country to another?
Yes. So if you're in North America or in Europe, there's a 5.4% duty. Now, as you know, in the digital camera business, it's highly competitive, and as you know, at least middle and high end digital cameras have camcorder capability. In other words, you can record video.
Sure.
And most people don't realize that when they have that capability, they have to know what the maximum number of recording minutes is, because it's based on the lowest resolution, and it cannot exceed 29 minutes and 59 seconds. That's a, in other words, it's in other words, it has to be less than 30 minutes, and if you record in high density, it could be something like only 6 minutes. All right.
So is this on your phone too?
No. Yes. Otherwise, it's called a camcorder, and with this 5.4% added duty, it makes you not competitive at all. And so a lot of people, they don't realize it. Like, I know that I tell people, like, if you're recording a sermon or videotaping a sermon or a wedding, hey, you better put it, make sure you have enough minutes. Can you imagine the middle of a wedding and, the minister saying, do you take this and so on, and all of a sudden it stops by itself, and then you have to hit the start button again to continue it.
Well,
did you know that?
We used to all have camcorders, and we used to all take two-hour videotapes.
Right.
And, and after a whole lifetime of taking a whole bunch, we all have train loads of VHS tapes from camcorders from way back when, and then I have, like a couple of giant boxes full of
camcorder business is if you look at it, the camcorder business is
we all taped those things, but nobody in the whole history of the world has ever sat down and watched one that I know of.
No, that's not true. I have.
I never have.
Well, just to let everyone know that the World Trade Organization is thinking about removing that restriction.
So if I'm taking my phone from one country to another, I have to pay?
No. Only if you can...
Is this at time of purchase, or what?
At time of purchase, if it's classified as a video camera, okay? In other words, if it's within a certain number of minutes, it's called a camera, not a video camera. By the way, it's a marketing thing. It's marketing.
That is completely whacked out. That's like one of those things on the phone bill. But the point I was trying to make before we took me off here into video camera crazy land is that originally we paid by the minute, and then we went with unlimited connectivity, and now they're trying to take that back away. They're so desperately trying to take it back away off the phones. I'm wondering if they're going to try and take it off of the connection in your home.
Okay.
Too.
Hey, listen, Dave, we're going to go into a short break. This is WBAI FM 99.5 New York, and we have a short announcement, and we will be right back with you, and we'll be taking phone calls at 212-209-2900, and I'm in the studio with Sydney Smith, and we have on the left coast David Perry.
The fun drive is over, and Joy of Resistance will be back on Wednesday, June 6th at 9 p.m. to catch you up on an extremely eventful month for women, from the very bad to the pretty good. We'll cover the new House version of the Violence Against Women Act that removes protections from immigrant women and Native women, a court decision that opens the way for a woman who has a miscarriage to be charged with murder, and even more restrictions on abortion and contraception. On the positive side, we'll report on a marked increase in feminist activity, including Unite Against the War on Women rallies in 54 cities and the first ever New York City Feminist General Assembly. So join us on June 6th at 9 p.m. for Joy of Resistance, a front line in itself in the fight for women's rights.
Religion, husband, father, brother, gonna define our existence.
Welcome back to the Personal Computer Show. This is Hank Key. I'm in the studio with Sydney Smith. He's our audio engineer this evening. And on the left coast, we have David Perry. David, you're still there, right?
I'm right here.
Good. Well, we have a couple of public service announcements. And as soon as we finish with that in a few minutes, we will be accepting phone calls on 212-209-2900. The Westchester PC User Group will be meeting on Thursday, which is tomorrow, June 7th at 7 p.m., and they're going to be offering a topic on more Microsoft shortcuts to be held at the White Plains Middle School, room 261 in White Plains, New York. The Long Island Mac User Group will be meeting on June 8th, which is on a Friday, 7 p.m., and making music and editing photos on the iPad. It will be held at the Old Westbury campus of New York Institute of Technology in the Anna Rubin Hall Building 300. The Rockland PC User Group will be meeting next week, Tuesday, June 12th, from 7:15 p.m. to 9:30 p.m., and their topic of presentation is, should you trust Google? Come on, that's an obvious answer. Rasso Room is a meeting place on the fourth floor at the Palisades Moor in West Nyack. The New York Amateur Computer Club will be meeting next Thursday, not this Thursday, June 14th, that's Flag Day, at NYU Silver Building at 32 Waverly Place, just east of Washington Square Park. And normally when I announce a meeting, I give you the topic, but this one I will also go beyond that and say who's giving the presentation. The topic of presentation is guaranteed protection, new methodologies to fight malware. And David, who do you think the presentation is? Who's going to be making the presentation?
That would be me, Hank.
Right. So David Perry will be in New York. He will be in the studio with us next Wednesday, and the next day after, he will be giving a presentation on new ways of fighting malware at NYU, 7 p.m., room 520, at the New York Amateur Computer Club General Meeting. And so it is open to the public. The only thing is photo IDs required. The Brookdale Computer User Group will be meeting on June 15th. It will be a webinar presentation on social media and the rest of us at Brookdale Community College at Lincroft, New Jersey, in Building MAS, room 100, and the meeting time is 7 p.m. And finally, NYC.net will be meeting on June 21st. Architecting for Failure, why cloud Architecture is Different. It will be held at the Microsoft office at 1290 Avenue of Americas. You have to register first to get into the building. That's NYC.net.dev.com, and they start at about 6 o'clock. And if you need more information, you can go to pcradioshow.org, and at the left hand side there is a place called announcement. You click on that, you can see other announcements also, and those are the public service announcements for this coming 1 to 2 weeks. And we are taking phone calls at 212-279-2900. And Sydney, do we have a first caller?
Yes, we do. One second.
Okay, he's getting to it. And good evening. This is Hank Key on the Personal Computer Show. Whom are we speaking to?
Oh, hi, are you there?
Yes. Whom are we speaking to?
Hi, my name's Neil. I'm calling from L.A.
L.A. Oh boy, you're really a short distance away.
Yeah.
From me, Neil. I'm in Huntington Beach, California.
Neil, how can we help you?
I use CallCentric. I'm calling you right now on CallCentric.
Mm-hmm.
But I also keep a landline for incoming.
Okay.
I'll tell you as an aside, the landline, I don't make outgoing calls on it. It costs me $50 a month, and most of it is taxes.
Yeah.
Yeah, me too. Mine's at $50 a month.
Well, I'm in New York. I'm paying $30, and I don't make any outgoing calls, and we only get 2-3 calls on. By the way, when I say 2-3 calls, the only calls I get on the landline is, this is your credit card company, this is your final call, if you don't respond, we won't call anymore. The next day I get the same call. I wonder how many people get that.
I had a question.
Yes.
The only problem I have with CallCentric is not them, it's that my crappy internet connection. And I'm in a place where they miswired the whole neighborhood, they have split pairs, so I can't get DSL.
Let me ask, how much are you paying now for your internet service?
Oh, I forgot. It's $70 a month.
$70? You know what you might want to consider?
It's a bundle.
Oh, it's a bundle. Okay. The reason why is because I've been telling people, if you are getting a high-speed broadband internet, one of the things you might want to consider is paying maybe $10 more a month, depending on, the service, is get national broadband where it's sort of like it's on a USB stick you carry with you, or a little, what they call a MiFi unit, and you carry it with you, and you can get the internet whether you're down by the shore or you're in the woods and so on, instead of saying the only way I can get high speed is in the home.
Or cell phone based?
It is It's a mix, okay? Because like I have a national broadband with Verizon, and they say that wherever you can get a incoming a cell phone call, you do have service. But I remember I was in Denali, and Denali cell phones are not allowed, or let's say there's no cell phone towers, so you can't even use a cell phone. But I was able to get on the internet, so obviously it's a mixture.
What kind of speed can you get, and what does it cost per month?
The speed will vary depending on the offering, because it's all regional, and how much it costs, again, it's regional. You have to check it out. But it might be worthwhile just to find out what's available, because there's more than Verizon that's offering it. There are other carriers, too.
And it's called national broadband?
Yes, national broadband. In other words, something that you carry with you instead of it being tethered in the home.
This would be like the old 3G dongle that I used to carry
with me. Right, right. When I say when David says dongle, it's like it could be a USB stick, or like in my case, it's a hockey puck, okay? I call it a hockey puck. All right, Neil?
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, and thank you for the call from L.A. Hey, listen, I didn't realize the first caller would be in your neck of the woods, David.
We very rarely get a call from Los Angeles. Thanks, Neil. Call again.
Okay, Sydney, who do we have next? Welcome to the Personal Computer Show, and who's calling?
Hello, Uncle Sydney. It's Tom from the Bronx.
Tom from the Bronx?
Yes, from the Bronx, are you, Tom?
Bronx, okay.
Okay, whatever.
Okay, how
no
can we help you?
No matter how you say it, a rose is a rose.
Well, a rose is a rose, but sometimes it smells a little differently, that's all.
Well, that's true.
And you know what? When the Yankees are winning, it smells great.
Oh, yeah. I'd like to say this. I would like to say that why can't there be a statute of limitations for kids that use Facebook? And in other words, why penalize somebody as an adult for something he put in Facebook as a child?
Well, very simple.
It's very vicious.
Very simple is that when people drop off or opt out and so on, in other words, Facebook, their database is constantly growing. It doesn't shrink. If it shrinks, that creates a different marketing problem for them. They want to be able to say, we are constantly adding people. We don't drop off people. Therefore,
well, there's another, right. There's a larger issue.
Yeah.
Once you've made something public on the internet, like say on Facebook, it's duplicated.
Yeah, but it was done as a kid.
Other places.
Well,
when he was a kid, I mean, or was a girl.
But how could you
woman.
Possibly pull it all back?
No, they should. No, not pulling anything back. Just make a statute of limitations where somebody that goes for a job isn't confronted with that idiocy.
Tom, let me put it this way, okay? If I don't like the way you look, that's not a reason for not hiring you. But the reason I give for not hiring you will be a different reason that is legally acceptable, even though I don't like the way you look.
Right, but I mean,
so in other words,
Ben was seen with a straw hat and fishing. I mean, years later, if he was going for a job in organization to save the fish, why should they hold that against him?
Tom,
you know what I mean?
Tom,
theory?
that's the human, that's human nature itself. And let me just say this: that's one reason why I don't believe in social networks, because I'm a private person. None of anyone's business, and if I say it's none of anyone's business, then I don't share my business with everyone else.
Yeah, but the way to handle that is legally where you say, look, what he did as 12 years old is not going to hold any water at 34 years
old. Yeah, but Tom, you know what the problem with that is? You could have
a
law.
Tom, when somebody doesn't hire you for whatever reason, they don't
listen,
tell
Tom,
the reason
let's put this
they
way.
Didn't hire
you.
You
can have a law, okay? And people would circumvent that law easily. And the other is, the law is only for the United States. If you want a job that's in Canada, the laws don't apply. In other words, laws in the United States don't apply in Canada. All right, Tom?
Yeah,
okay.
What I'm getting at is it's an idiocy that's going
yes,
on there.
Yes, I agree with you. Okay, we're going to have a lot of other calls. We're going to be moving on. But thank you for the call, Tom. And Sydney, who do we have next? Welcome to Personal Computer Show. Whom am I speaking to?
This is David.
David, where are you calling from?
Calling from Manhattan.
Manhattan. Oh, as what Steve would say, that's the money place, right?
Yep.
Okay, you're the one with you're the 1%.
I don't think so.
How can we help you, David?
Well, just wanted to ask you, because I understand that your co-host, he mentioned that he has Vonage, and I was always wondering, do these wireless phone services, do they really work like Vonage and Magic Jack and any other that may exist? Do they
let me put it this way.
I am speaking to you on Vonage.
Right. I was just going to say, they work. The question is how well they work. In other words, how about the clarity, the fidelity, and the availability, David?
I find the clarity... Okay, now, I actually tested Magic Jack as well, and the clarity wasn't bad on Magic Jack, but on Vonage, it's indistinguishable from a hard telephone line.
What about availability? In other words, that you always...
If you have internet. You know, and the other thing is, I have a ton of internet. I have 20 up, 20 down internet. What we call a fat pipe. That's pretty
okay. What David Perry is saying is that you live in the Manhattan, so I don't know who your ISP is, but mine happens to be Time Warner. I could tell you that I live in Queens, and somehow every 2-3 nights at 2 a.m., 3 a.m., they cut off service, and I'm mad as hell at them. So, in other words, if I needed a phone, and it's at 2 a.m., and if I don't have internet with Vonage, I have no phone service.
So tell me, then, aren't they, and I understand that Verizon and, you know, Southwest Bell, they all say the same thing, that they will cater to their customers first, and the other services they cater secondarily.
Yeah, but it's their service to begin with. In other words, like I know with Time Warner, they have the three play where you have internet, TV, and telephone. Okay.
Internet, TV, and telephone.
Right.
Yeah.
And I find that the TV could be working, but I have no internet.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, what David Perry is saying is that with Vonage, if you have no internet, you also have no phone.
Exactly.
Yes, this is true.
That's what I'm saying. So, and the thing is that if you're dependent on the major carrier, which is Verizon or whomever it may be in California,
I'm on Verizon.
In California?
Yeah.
Sure. Verizon is nationwide. It goes all the way out to Hawaii.
Oh, okay. So, but they will cater to their hardline customers first. Like
No. You'll find that they operate by divisions, and each division have their responsibility. And
so you mean they will not, if anything happens, they will not think of Vonage as a secondary customer or a...
Vonage is just Vonage is just running through the internet.
Yeah, in other words,
I'm paying $82.99 every month to Verizon for Fios internet connectivity.
Yeah, what David Perry is saying is that if you have internet, then you have telephone with Vonage, and so don't think of it as telephone. Think of it as internet in that case.
Okay, now tell me something. They wouldn't. In other words, would Verizon penalize you in any way?
I don't believe so.
If you're Vonage or if you're Jack as opposed to Verizon?
No.
In fact, I had Verizon phones and Verizon internet for phones forever, okay? Way back to when it was called General Telephone.
Okay.
Verizon is what's left of General Telephone.
Right.
So I'm
GT&E, right. Okay.
Years and years and years, I had GTE.
David, we're going
to... And then I said, wow, they've got Fios Internet. And I got Fios Internet. This is before they ever had Fios Television.
Right. David,
and
we're going to have to move on. We have a lot of callers.
The first neighborhood with Fios Internet, and I got wired for Internet.
David, let me thank David. We have lots of callers, and
okay,
they're all lined up, and we'll have to get to them. Otherwise, they're going to think that we're ignoring them, okay?
Here I
David?
Am talking over it right now.
Okay. All right. Let's get to the next caller. This is WBAI. Welcome to the Personal Computer Show. And who am I speaking to?
Oh, my gosh. This is Noelle from Long Island. I didn't think I'd get through. How are you, gentlemen?
Long Island. What's your name again?
Noelle.
Noelle?
Yes.
Ah, how are you?
I'm well.
You've called before.
I have. Ah,
I can recognize the name and the voice.
Oh, my goodness. I'm honored.
How can we help you?
Well, I feel like the biggest dodo once again.
Nah, you're not. Listen, there is no such thing as a stupid question.
Really?
No such thing as a stupid question.
Okay, so here goes. So I know this is like the easiest thing in the world to do, but I can't download Adobe Flash Player. And I think I'm doing everything right, but I guess I'm doing something wrong. And it hasn't asked me, like, what happened was I was on this, I'm revealing something here, internet dating site. And I had to upgrade my Adobe Flash Player.
Well, let me ask a question. Are you going to the Adobe site, or are you going to a another site like download.com to do it?
No, I put it right in the, in the top, in the line in the top.
No. Do you go to Adobe?
Adobe.com.
You go to Adobe.com?
Absolutely, yeah.
Well, one of the things I find to make it easier, because I've had similar problems with it, is I download, before I download it, I uninstall Adobe Flash, and then I downloaded. I find that the upgrade sometimes is confusing because
I did that. Oh my gosh, I did that! Wow, I did something you would have done. Cool.
And if you do that, you should be able to follow through. And I have to be honest with you. I hate Adobe Flash.
Really?
I really hate it because they're constantly saying every day there's an upgrade. I mean, like I feel like
but
saying
it's rude. They haven't been offering me anything. It would have been easier just to do it that way and like click on a link or something. Adobe Flash Player 11.2.22202 whatever.
Dot dot dot and so on.
Can I
tell you what I do?
What?
When they say there's an update, I ignore it until I really have to do it. Okay.
Okay.
Because sometimes, I mean, when they have 2-3 updates in one day, that's not the way to run a business.
Okay. Yeah.
All right?
Yeah.
Noelle? So just because they say have an update, big deal.
And those are all plugging security holes, mostly, I do believe.
Yeah, but if they're giving you these, plug-in security holes 2-3 times a day, I mean, what kind of QA testing are they doing?
I really want to have this because, honestly, I mean, it makes listening to the archives on DAI a lot easier. I even emailed you guys about this, too.
All right. Okay. Listen. In other words, you don't have to go through all those updates, all right?
Okay.
Okay. Thank you for the call, Noelle. Let's take another call. This is WBAI, and welcome to the Personal Computer Show. Who am I speaking to?
Hello?
Is the caller there?
Yes,
you have
yes,
to turn down
yes.
your radio. Who am I speaking to?
Okay, this is MD. I think, is this a radio station?
Yes, yes, you are. And okay. Where are you calling from?
Okay, calling from Brooklyn.
Brooklyn. This is Amni?
Yes, sir.
Okay, and how are you doing?
I'm fine.
How can we help you?
Okay, is there a radio program going on right now on the computer, my computer or something?
You are on the show. You are on the air right now.
Oh, okay, great.
Do you have any questions?
Yeah.
You know, if you have your radio on, you have to turn it off because we are on delay and it's going to be very confusing. You're going to hear one thing different from another.
Okay. I got it.
Good.
Got
so you turn down your radio when you're on the air. So,
okay.
Any comments? Anything you want to ask?
Yes, I got the question is regarding my, like, you know, right now, currently, I've been, you know, using my cell phone with, like, you know, which is called with T-Mobile for like, you know, more than 5.5 years. And what happened is, it's like, you know, I've been using that and, you know, I like the GSM styles so far. So like, you know, you could switch.
So what's the question?
The question is like, you know, they offer unlimited internet and, you know, that's why I've been like, you know, I did a contract for 2 years and,
mm-hmm.
and what happened is like, you know, in the middle of the contract now, what they do, it's like if you use a little bit higher.
Okay.
Like, you know,
in other words, they there's a limit. There's a cap.
Yeah. And they just send you a message and saying, like, you know, since of using the higher volume of amount of data you use.
Well, with T-Mobile, it's slightly different. When you hit the cap, what they
do
is they slow you down.
Okay.
It's not like an extra charge like in Verizon. They bump you up and they charge more. But with T-Mobile, they say, okay, you hit the cap, it slows you down, and And I find that, I mean, realistically, unless you're downloading something like a movie, you really don't, you know, for most people, they won't hit that cap.
Okay.
But if you're downloading, you know, like from Netflix, you know, lots of movies, you're going to hit it very quickly.
Okay. Like, you know, recently I've been watching Netflix and that, and, you know, it's like a couple movies you watch is saying, like, you know, the data speed is going to be slowed down since of, higher volume. I don't know. So is that, like, you know, what it's offering?
Well, what I'm going to say is that if you're going to download movies, either pay a higher price or just say, send it to me. In other words, because Netflix, you can order it directly instead of going through the cloud. Okay?
Right.
All right. Okay. Okay. I hope that answers your question. And let's take one more caller, at least, hopefully. And this is the Personal Computer Show. Who am I speaking to?
Hi, Radio Wolf. This is PK, Professor Klystron from Walton.
Walton, Massachusetts?
New York. I'm here. Sorry.
Oh, okay.
A little nice in the show. I have two quick questions.
Okay, go ahead, PK.
Okay, the first one is, I always assumed that computers, not on a little network, but across the Internet, were very easy to connect together.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody is now telling me that you need extra programs. Is there a simple way without really adding anything to connect to, say, let's say, to LXPs?
Well, what purpose? Wait, let me ask you, what operating system are you using?
XP, Dell XP, actually, and Home.
Okay.
Dell almost always Home.
The answer is you need to add a little patch if you're running XP Home.
Yeah.
Okay. If you're running XP Pro, you don't need it.
Yeah.
This is something you can download, okay? In other words, with XP Home, networking requires an add-on. With XP Pro, it's already built in, and that's the main difference between Pro and Home.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And what's your second question? We're running out of time, so I'm moving along.
It's not really a question. I just wanted to say, I just want to give out a shared email. We're looking to design from scratch an operating system. I'd like to know what hobbyists would like to send an email. We're kind of waiting together, and the email is RussianWoodpecker@Yahoo.
Okay.
RussianWoodpecker@Yahoo. If somebody is in the interest of actually designing an OS from scratch.
Okay. All right. We got that, PK. And Sydney, one more call. Let's take it. Who do we have? Whoops. I'm out of time. Thank you for listening to WBAI. This is the Personal Computer Show. Thank you, David.
Hank, I'll see you next week.
You're going to be on the air live, and then this way I don't have to step on you, and you don't have to step on me because we can see each other.
Right.
Okay, and hopefully when you come in, I'll see a big smiley face.
Right.
Same time, same station next week. Thank you for listening. This is Hank Key. Thank you, Sydney. Thank you, David. Good night.
Tuned to WBAI in New York and WBAI.org on the World Wide Web. The preceding program, the Personal Computer Show, was brought to you live with certain portions on recording. The Joy of Resistance with Fran Look is coming up next. Please, please stay tuned.
Hi, I'm Ken Gale, host and producer of Ecologic here on WBAI, and I want to tell you about a wonderful environmental and music festival, the Clearwater Great Hudson River Revival. Besides five stages of incredible music, a stage just for kids, dozens of craftspeople, and a beautiful view of the Hudson River, there are dozens of activist tables covering nearly every environmental issue from solar energy to fracking to life on the Hudson River. Get connected. Get educated. Visit the WBAI booth. Most of all, have fun. It's Father's Day weekend, June 16th and 17th at Croton Point Park in Westchester. Metro North will get you there. For more info, go to www.clearwaterfestival.org.
Sunshine, when you're with me, I can fly.
30 years ago on June 12th, over a million people gathered in Central Park to protest against nuclear energy and weaponry. To commemorate the beautiful memories and break through the anti-nuclear movement, we are going to walk again.
Come to Tompkins Square Park in the East Village at 7:30 p.m. Bring your radio or boombox to the march and tune to Ecologic at 8 p.m. Instead of speakers and music on a stage, authors Chris Williams and Alice Slater will discuss nuclear power and weapons on WBAI. Minori Nakamura will talk about Indian Point and Fukushima, and the Raging Grannies will be performing live music.
That's Tuesday, June 12th, 7:30 p.m. at Tompkins Square Park, and 8 p.m. right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org.
Bring your radio.
Be mobile.
No more nukes.
Hi, this is Alec Baldwin, and you're tuned to WBAI, listener-supported, non-commercial radio in New York. Anything can happen. Support WBAI, Peace and Justice Radio in New York. Anything can happen.
And the time is 9 p.m. here at WBAI New York and WBAI.org, and we hear next the Joy of Resistance.
Joy of Resistance. We're sisters of the Joy of Resistance. No corporation, government, religion, husband, father, brother, gonna define our existence. Joy of Resistance. We have found the joy in resistance. For those who gain by keeping women down, we say your numbers up, don't underestimate our persistence. Joy of Resistance. We have found the joy in resistance. We got a way to go before we're free. We're keeping organized together. We have come a long distance. Joy, joy of resistance. We're sisters of the joy of resistance. No corporation, government, religion, husband, father, brother, gonna define our existence. Joy.
And good evening. This is Fran Luck, and this is the Joy of Resistance. And we are so happy to be back after a month and a half hiatus, including the fun drive. And we've got a lot to present to you tonight. So very much has been going on in the world of women's activism. Well, both good and bad. It's almost like time has speeded up. There's been so much stuff. The right wing of this country has been going for broke in trying to pass bills to take away our rights. And at the same time, there's been more feminist activism than I've seen in a really long time. On April 24th, in 54 cities, for instance, there were rallies under the banner Unite to Fight the War Against Women. On May 5th in New York City, there was a program at the Brecht Forum called What's Next for Feminism in New York City, and that was very well attended. And then on May 17th, there was the first ever New York City Feminist General Assembly of Occupy Wall Street, and that was a long time in coming. And lastly, last week, May 29th, at the Center, the Ethical Culture Society, there was a panel called The Resurgence of Misogyny with Kate Pollitt, Katha Pollitt, and many others. So tonight, we're going to focus on the last two events. We have live in the studio some of the organizers of the Feminist General Assembly, and we will have some sounds from it. And let me just say hello to Lorena and to Dior. And just say hello to everybody.
Hi, everyone.
And we'll be back with you in a little bit after the news. And we're also going to have Judith Levine on the phone. She's another organizer. So that should be really exciting because this was a wonderful event.
Thank you.
First, some of, I'm afraid, the mostly bad news. Yesterday, June 5th, Republicans blocked the Paycheck Fairness Act, which would have barred employers from retaliating against workers who shared information on wages, and women members and other discriminated against groups would not be able to seek back pay, but could also seek punitive damages for pay discrimination. They would be blocked from seeking back pay. The GOP claimed the bill was a war on free enterprise, and Republican Senator Rand Paul compared it to a, quote, paycheck Politburo. Its proponents say it would have drastically leveled the playing field for women in the workforce, who still make an average of 77 cents for every dollar that men make. We also have a very regressive version of the Violence Against Women Act that has passed the House. Since 1994, the Violence Against Women Act, which authorizes funding for protection against violent abuse, has been reauthorized. But on May 16th, the Republican-dominated House of Representatives passed a version that, according to the Center for American Progress, quote, rolls back progress and threatens the health and safety of many Americans living in violent or abusive relationships. According to the National Organization for Women, H.R. 4970 entirely excludes lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer victims. It enhances abusers' power over immigrant women by allowing immigration agents to contact abusers and hear their complaints about the immigration status of their victims. It fails to address the crisis of violence against American Indian women by not recognizing tribal court authority, and that holds perpetrators accountable. And it rolls back resources for women of color and their communities that were gained in 2005. Representative Carol Lynn Maloney said the House Republican version of the Violence Against Women Act is, quote, just another assault in what was has sadly and surely become known as the Republican War Against Women, close quote. President Obama has threatened to veto the bill if the House provisions stand. And you can find out how to put pressure on representatives by going to the National Organization for Women website at www.now.org. By the way, we are running this news and links to many other sources for it on our Joy of Resistance blog, which is at joyofresistance.wordpress.com. So be sure to go there. And as long as you are at your computer, you might want to look at the WBAI website, where we have a wonderful picture of the Feminist General Assembly. And that's at www.wbai.org. All right, on with the news. On May 12th in Indiana, a court of appeals let stand a decision that resulted in murder charges against a pregnant woman who, while depressed, tried to commit suicide and whose baby after birth did not survive. Bebe Shui, jailed for 14 months, now out on bail, was charged under a feticide statute supposedly designed to protect pregnant women from external violence. The case is considered to have grave implications for the constitutional rights and personhood of all pregnant women. According to Lynn Paltrow of National Advocates for Pregnant Women, any health care provider can now say to a pregnant patient who disagrees with his treatment that he will report her to state authorities under feticide laws. And women who have miscarriages can conceivably face murder charges. And we have a link to a press conference you really should listen to on our blog. And you can hear Lynn Paltrow saying this and much more about the implications of this bill. And again, that's joyofresistance.wordpress.com. There's also a change.org position on this case. A couple of local stories. According to a story by David Graeber, an OWS activist and an anthropologist writing in the blog Kasama, there have been a mounting number of reports of women having had their breasts grabbed and or having been otherwise sexually assaulted by members of the NYPD during the arrests that have taken place at protests by Occupy Wall Street. Graeber says in his article at Kasama.org, quote, arbitrary violence is nothing new. The apparently systematic use of sexual assault against women protesters is new, and goes on to speculate about the connections between these tactics and tactics used by used against women by police forces around the world, specifically in recent protests in Egypt. To read the complete article, go to kasamaproject.org/2012, or you can see the entire article at again at joyofresistance.wordpress.org. Again, locally, Choices Women's Medical Center, established in 1971 and one of the first in New York State to perform abortions, has moved from its former Long Island City location to a new home in Jamaica, Queens. The move was a result of extreme landlord neglect at the previous location, and according to founder and CEO Merle Hoffman, the neglect is part of the picture of the many forms of harassment faced by clinics that perform abortions, even in New York City, and she has filed a FACE complaint, and that is a law which protects clinics against harassment. This reporter visited the reopened clinic, found it to be immaculate, state-of-the-art, and warm and welcoming, with walls hung with art relating to women's reproductive history and the history of the civil rights and feminist movements. Even before Choices reopened, anti-abortion protesters started protesting it. Last Saturday, about 20 were outside with big color signs supposedly of aborted fetuses. Your help is needed from 7 to 11 every Saturday to provide supportive climate and escort women into the clinic. And if you'd like to be part of that, send an email to news@choicesmedical.com. That's news@choicesmedical.com, and you can be part of the Choices support group. And we have one more story. Tens of thousands of women rallied in Turkey's largest city, Istanbul, to protest a new attempt to ban abortion in that nation. The Turkish Prime Minister, Recep Tayyip Erdogan, has told his cabinet to prepare a law that would ban abortions after 4 weeks, effectively a ban. Turkey currently allows abortions until the 10th week. Erdogan, the head of an Islamic and business-oriented party, has recently said Turkey should emulate anti-abortion legislation in Western countries. To Tugba İze Bajik of the Istanbul Feminist Collective said, quote, if abortion is banned in Turkey, women will still have them, but under unhealthy and dangerous conditions. Marchers in the June 3rd rally in Istanbul carried banners that said, we are women, not reproductive machines. And some of that came from The Guardian, and you can see the other links in, again, in the Joy of Resistance blog, where we're posting all of our new stories so we don't have to go on too long on the show, which is short enough. And you can get to that at joyofresistance.wordpress.com. And now we'll take a little music break and come back and talk about the Feminist General Assembly, the first ever.
To the shame and the desperation. It's our bodies, our choice, our lives. Taking your laws off of our bodies. They strip the rights of the young and poor. Freedom of choice for each and every woman. That's the choice we are.
You can't be pro-life if you're not pro-life. big takeaways. About our session. Is that we need more of them. That we need more feminist GAs.
Mic check.
This is my report back. From our group. Of about maybe nine people.
I'm going to go through.
One goal at a time. Kind of trace it through. So first of all. One of us identified. An interesting challenge. That we have a facade. Of rights. That we supposedly. Already have. The challenge being. How do we actually own those rights? Actively. We didn't really come up with a solution for that. We thought there was a parallel to that.
And you have been listening to a little bit of the sound from the first ever New York City Feminist General Assembly of OWS. There's a lot more where that came from, but first let me bring in our two studio guests, and we'll have another guest on the phone shortly. I want to introduce two of the organizers of this event, D.R. Vargas.
Hi.
So glad you're here.
Thank you so much.
And Lorena D'Ambrosio.
Yes. Thank you so much for having us.
Oh, thank you so much for organizing this extraordinary event. Let me tell you that when I got to Washington Square Park on May 17th and saw all the people there and just the beautiful setting and the arch and everything, and I thought, oh, this is just so wonderful. And then it started. And organizers came out and started saying, you know, welcome, mic check, and everyone was shouting and people were laughing. And what you were hearing before as we came into this segment were some of the report backs that came a little bit later, okay, because everyone split into groups and had major discussions and came back and reported back to everybody. But let's go back to the beginning, and I believe we have our other guest who is on the phone, Judith Levine.
Hi,
good evening.
Nice to be here.
It's great to have you on Joy of Resistance. I'm sitting in the studio with Lorena and with Dior, and now you're on the phone, and we can start our discussion proper. The first thing I wanted to do was ask our in-studio guests to talk a little bit about how they got involved in this and how you all came up with this structure that was really so successful. And I'm going to ask you at that point, Judy, also to tell us your version of that. So who wants to take it off?
Okay. All right. So basically,
This is Lorena, yes.
How I got into it all is I saw the ad for the Feminist GA on the project list that OWS has, where they list all their events and stuff. And it so happened to be that that same day I met Melanie Golds, which was also one of the organizers. And she told me about it. She invited me to the planning group. I went to a meeting, and it's just how beautifully and inspiring everything was coming together, and just the fact that I was able to be part of that and just to grow the way that it did, it felt really good.
That sounds wonderful. Dior, did you have a similar experience?
Yes. My friend Natalie actually emailed me about the organizing, and the minute I saw it, I knew that this was something that I had to get involved in. And so upon attending the first meeting, I realized how many people were there and you know, really excited about the prospect of having a general assembly. And so as a feminist, I just knew I was in the right place at the right time.
Yeah, actually had that feeling, this event that had been waiting to happen.
Yes.
Why did you think it was important for this event to happen?
Oh, I think it was extremely important because just even, I first went to OWS back in October. It was actually for a musical gathering that some friends of mine were having. And